Chapter 17 Continued. Harry didn't know what to think. Was it a trick? "If you haven't been helping him," he said with a furious glance at Black, "how did you know he was here?" "The map," said Lupin. "The Marauder's map. I was in my office examining it." "You know how to work it?" Harry said suspiciously. "Of course I know how to work it," said Lupin, waving his hand impatiently. "I helped write it. I'm Mooney. That was my friend's nickname for me at school." "You wrote?" "The important thing is, I was watching it carefully this evening, because I had an idea that you, Ron, and Hermione might try and sneak out of the castle to visit Hagrid before his hippogriff was executed. And I was right, wasn't I?" He had started to pace up and down, looking at them. Little patches of dust rose at his feet. "You might have been wearing your father's old cloak, Harry."
"How do you know about the cloak?"
"The number of times I saw James disappearing under it," said Lupin, waving an impatient hand again. "The point is, even if you're wearing an invisibility cloak, you show up on the Marauder's map. I watched you cross the grounds and enter Hagrid's hut. 20 minutes later you left Hagrid and set off back towards the castle, but you were now accompanied by somebody else."
"What?" said Harry. "No, we weren't."
"I couldn't believe my eyes," said Lupin, still pacing and ignoring Harry's interruption. "I thought the map must be malfunctioning. How could he be with you?"
"No one was with us," said Harry.
"And then I saw another dot, moving fast towards you, labelled Sirius Black. I saw him collide with you. I watched as he pulled two of you into the Whomping Willow."
"One of us," said Ron, angrily.
"No, Ron," said Lupin. "Two of you." He had stopped his pacing, his eyes moving over Ron. "Do you think I could have a look at the rat?" he said, evenly.
"What?" said Ron. "What's Scabbers got to do with it?"
"Everything," said Lupin. "Could I see him, please?" Ron hesitated, then put a hand inside his robes. Scabbers emerged, thrashing desperately. Ron had to seize his long, bald tail to stop him escaping. Crookshanks stood up on Black's lap and made a soft, hissing noise. Lupin moved closer to Ron. He seemed to be holding his breath as he gazed intently at Scabbers.
"What?" Ron said again, holding Scabbers close to him, looking scared. "What's my rat got to do with anything?"
"That's not a rat," croaked Sirius Black suddenly.
"What do you mean? Of course he's a rat."
"No, he's not," said Lupin quietly. "He's a wizard."
"An animagus," said Black, "by the name of Peter Pettigrew."
Chapter 18 Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs. It took a few seconds for the absurdity of this statement to sink in. Then Ron voiced what Harry was thinking.
"You're both mental!"
"Ridiculous," said Hermione faintly. "Peter Pettigrew's dead," said Harry. "He killed him 12 years ago." He pointed at Black, whose face twitched convulsively.
"I meant to," he growled, his yellow teeth bared. "But little Peter got the better of me. Not this time, though."
And Crookshanks was thrown to the floor as Black lunged at Scabbers. Ron yelled with pain as Black's weight fell on his broken leg.
"Sirius, no!"
Lupin yelled, launching himself forwards and dragging Black away from Ron again.
"Wait! You can't do it just like that. They need to understand. We've got to explain."
"We can explain afterwards," snarled Black, trying to throw Lupin off, one hand still clawing the air as it tried to reach Scabbers, who was squealing like a piglet, scratching Ron's face and neck as he tried to escape.
"They've got a right to know everything," Lupin panted, still trying to restrain Black. "Ron's kept him as a pet. There are parts of it even I don't understand. And Harry, you owe Harry the truth, Sirius."
Black stopped struggling.
though his hollowed eyes were still fixed on Scabbers, who was clamped tightly under Ron's bitten, scratched and bleeding hands.
"All right, then," Black said, without taking his eyes off the rat. "Tell them whatever you like, but make it quick, Remus. I want to commit the murder I was imprisoned for."
"You're nutters, both of you," said Ron shakily, looking round at Harry and Hermione for support. "I've had enough of this. I'm off." He tried to heave himself up on his good leg, but Lupin raised his wand again, pointing it at Scabbers.
"You're going to hear me out, Ron," he said quietly. "Just keep a tight hold on Peter while you listen."
"He's not Peter, he's Scabbers!" Ron yelled, trying to force the rat back into his front pocket, but Scabbers was fighting too hard. Ron swayed and overbalanced, and Harry caught him and pushed him back down to the bed. Then, ignoring Black, Harry turned to Lupin.
"There were witnesses who saw Pettigrew die," he said. "A whole street full of them."
"They didn't see what they thought they saw," said Black savagely, still watching Scabbers struggling in Ron's hands.
"Everyone thought Sirius killed Peter," said Lupin, nodding. "I believed it myself, until I saw the map tonight. Because the Marauder's map never lies. Peter's alive. Ron's holding him, Harry."
Harry looked down at Ron, and as their eyes met, they agreed, silently. Black and Lupin were both out of their minds. Their story made no sense whatsoever. How could Scabbers be Peter Pettigrew? Azkaban must have unhinged Black after all. But why was Lupin playing along with him? Then Hermione spoke, in a trembling, would-be calm sort of voice, as though trying to will Professor Lupin to talk sensibly.
"But, Professor Lupin, Scabbers can't be Pettigrew. It just can't be true. You know it can't."
"Why can't it be true?" Lupin said calmly, as though they were in class and Hermione had simply spotted a problem in an experiment with Grindelows.
Because people would know if Peter Pettigrew had been an animagus. We did animagi in class with Professor McGonagall, and I looked them up when I did my homework. The Ministry keeps tabs on witches and wizards who can become animals. There's a register showing what animal they become, and their markings and things. And I went and looked Professor McGonagall up on the register, and there have only been 7 animagi this century, and Pettigrew's name wasn't on the list."
Harry barely had time to marvel inwardly at the effort Hermione put into her homework when Lupin started to laugh.
"Right again, Hermione," he said. "But the Ministry never knew that there used to be 3 unregistered animagi running around Hogwarts."
"If you're going to tell them the story, get a move on, Remus," snarled Black, who was still watching Scabbers's every desperate move. "I've waited 12 years. I'm not going to wait much longer."
"All right, but you'll need to help me, Sirius," said Lupin. "I only know how it began." Lupin broke off. There had been a loud creak behind him. The bedroom door had opened of its own accord. All 5 of them stared at it. Then Lupin strode towards it and looked out of the landing. No one there.
"This place is haunted," said Ron.
"It's not," said Lupin, still looking at the door in a puzzled way. "The Shrieking Shack was never haunted. The screams and howls the villagers used to hear were made by me." He pushed his greying hair out of his eyes, thought for a moment, then said, "That's where all of this starts, with my becoming a werewolf. None of this could have happened if I hadn't been bitten and if I hadn't been so foolhardy." He looked sober and tired. Ron started to interrupt, but Hermione said, "Shh!" She was watching Lupin very intently. "I was a very small boy when I received the bite. My parents tried everything, but in those days there was no cure. The potion that Professor Snape has been making for me is a very recent discovery. It makes me safe, you see. As long as I take it in the week preceding the full moon, I keep my mind when I transform. I am able to curl up in my office, a harmless wolf, and wait for the moon to wane again. Before the Wolfsbane potion was discovered, however, I became a fully fledged monster once a month.
It seemed impossible that I would be able to come to Hogwarts. Other parents weren't likely to want their children exposed to me. But then Dumbledore became headmaster, and he was sympathetic. He said that as long as we took certain precautions, there was no reason I shouldn't come to school. Lupin sighed and looked directly at Harry. I told you months ago that the Whomping Willow was planted the year I came to Hogwarts. The truth is that it was planted because I had come to Hogwarts. This house, Lupin looked miserably around the room, the tunnel that leads to it, they were built for my use. Once a month I was smuggled out of the castle into this place to transform. The tree was placed at the tunnel mouth to stop anyone coming across me while I was dangerous. Harry couldn't see where this story was going, but he was listening raptly all the same. The only sound, apart from Lupin's voice, was Scabbers's frightened squeaking. My transformations in those days were terrible. It was very painful to turn into a werewolf. I was separated from humans to bite, so I bit and scratched myself instead. The villagers heard the noise and the screaming, and thought they were hearing particularly violent spirits. Dumbledore encouraged the rumour. Even now, when the house has been silent for years, the villagers don't dare approach it. But apart from my transformations, I was happier than I had ever been in my life. For the first time ever, I had friends. Three great friends. Sirius Black, Peter Pettigrew, and of course your father, Harry, James Potter. Now my three friends could hardly fail to notice that I disappeared once a month. I made up all sorts of stories. I told them my mother was ill and that I had to go home to see her. I was terrified they would desert me the moment they found out what I was. But of course they, like you, Hermione, worked out the truth. And they didn't desert me at all. Instead they did something for me that would make my transformations not only bearable, but the best times of my life. They became animagi.
"My dad, too," said Harry, astounded.
"Yes, indeed," said Lupin. "It took them the best part of 3 years to work out how to do it. Your father and Sirius here were the cleverest students in the school, and lucky they were, because the animagus transformation can go horribly wrong. One reason the Ministry keeps a close watch on those attempting to do it. Peter needed all the help he could get from James and Sirius. Finally, in our 5th year, they managed it. They could each turn into a different animal at will."
"But how did that help you?"
said Hermione, sounding puzzled. "They couldn't keep me company as humans, so they kept me company as animals," said Lupin. "A werewolf is only a danger to people. They sneaked out of the castle every month under James's invisibility cloak. They transformed. Peter, as the smallest, could slip beneath the willow's attacking branches and touch the knot that freezes it. They would then slip down the tunnel and join me. Under their influence I became less dangerous. My body was still wolfish, but my mind seemed to become less so while I was with them."
"Hurry up, Remus!" snarled Black, who was still watching Scabbers with a horrible sort of hunger in his face.
"I'm getting there, Sirius, I'm getting there. Well, highly exciting possibilities were open to us, now we could all transform. Soon we were leaving the shrieking shack and roaming the school grounds and the village by night. Sirius and James transformed into such large animals they were able to keep a werewolf in check. I doubt whether any Hogwarts students ever found out more about the Hogwarts grounds and Hogsmeade than we did. And that's how we came to write the Marauder's Map and sign it with our nicknames. Sirius is Padfoot, Peter is Wormtail, James was Prongs."
"What sort of animal—" Harry began, but Hermione cut across him. "That was still really dangerous, running around in the dark with a werewolf. What if you'd given the others the slip and bitten somebody?"
"A thought that still haunts me," said Lupin heavily. "And there were near misses, many of them. We laughed about them afterwards. We were young, thoughtless, carried away with our own cleverness. I sometimes felt guilty about betraying Dumbledore's trust, of course. He had admitted me to Hogwarts when no other headmaster would have done so, and he had no idea I was breaking the rules he had set down for my own and others' safety. He never knew I had led 3 fellow students into becoming animagi illegally. But I always managed to forget my guilty feelings every time we sat down to plan our next month's adventure. And I haven't changed. Lupin's face had hardened, and there was self-disgust in his voice. All this year I have been battling with myself, wondering whether I should tell Dumbledore that Sirius was an animagus. But I didn't do it. Why? Because I was too cowardly. It would have meant admitting that I'd betrayed his trust while I was at school, admitting that I'd led others along with me. And Dumbledore's trust has meant everything to me. He let me into Hogwarts as a boy, and he gave me a job when I have been shunned all my adult life, unable to find paid work because of what I am. And so I convinced myself that Sirius was getting into the school using dark arts he learned from Voldemort, that being an animagus had nothing to do with it. So in a way, Snape's been right about me all along.
"Snape!" said Black, harshly, taking his eyes off Scabbers for the first time in minutes and looking up at Lupin. "What's Snape got to do with it?"
"He's here, Sirius," said Lupin heavily. "He's teaching here as well." He looked up at Harry, Ron, and Hermione. "Professor Snape was at school with us. He fought very hard against my appointment to the Defence Against the Dark Arts job. He has been telling Dumbledore all year that I am not to be trusted. He has his reasons. You see, Sirius here played a trick on him which nearly killed him, a trick which involved me." Black made a derisive noise.
"It served him right," he sneered, "sneaking around, trying to find out what we were up to, hoping he could get us expelled."
"Severus was very interested in where I went every month," Lupin told Harry, Ron, and Hermione. "We were in the same year, you know, and we, didn't like each other very much. He especially disliked James, jealous, I think, of James's talent on the Quidditch pitch. Anyway, Snape had seen me crossing the grounds with Madame Pomfrey one evening as she led me towards the Whomping Willow to transform. Sirius thought it would be amusing to tell Snape all he had to do was prod the knot on the tree trunk with a long stick, and he'd be able to get in after me. Well, of course, Snape tried it. If he'd got as far as this house, he'd have met a fully grown werewolf. But your father, who'd heard what Sirius had done, went after Snape and pulled him back, at great risk to his life. Snape glimpsed me, though, at the end of the tunnel. He was forbidden to tell anybody by Dumbledore, but from that time on he knew what I was."
"So that's why Snape doesn't like you," said Harry slowly. "Because he thought you were in on the joke." "That's right," sneered a cold voice from the wall behind Lupin.
Severus Snape was pulling off the invisibility cloak, his wand pointing directly at Lupin. Chapter 19. The Servant of Lord Voldemort. Hermione screamed. Black leapt to his feet. Harry jumped as though he'd received a huge electric shock.
"I found this at the base of the Whomping Willow," said Snape, throwing the cloak aside, careful to keep his wand pointing directly at Lupin's chest. "Very useful, Potter. I thank you."
Snape was slightly breathless, but his face was full of suppressed triumph.
"You're wondering, perhaps, how I knew you were here," he said, his eyes glittering. "I've just been to your office, Lupin. You forgot to take your potion tonight, so I took a goblet full along. And very lucky I did. Lucky for me, I mean. Lying on your desk was a certain map. One glance at it told me all I needed to know. I saw you running along this passageway and out of sight."
"Severus," Lupin began, but Snape overrode him.
"I've told the headmaster again and again that you've been helping your old friend Black into the castle, Lupin, and here's the proof.
Not even I dreamed you would have the nerve to use this old place as your hideout.
"Severus, you're making a mistake," said Lupin urgently. "You haven't heard everything. I can explain. Sirius is not here to kill Harry."
"Two more for Azkaban tonight," said Snape, his eyes now gleaming fanatically. "I shall be interested to see how Dumbledore takes this. He was quite convinced you were harmless, you know, Lupin, a tame werewolf."
"You fool," said Lupin softly. "Is a schoolboy grudge worth putting an innocent man back inside Azkaban?"
Bang! Thin, snake-like cords burst from the end of Snape's wand and twisted themselves around Lupin's mouth, wrists, and ankles. He overbalanced and fell to the floor, unable to move. With a roar of rage, Black started towards Snape, but Snape pointed his wand straight between Black's eyes.
"Give me a reason," he whispered. "Give me a reason to do it, and I swear I will."
Black stopped dead. It would have been impossible to say which face showed more hatred. Harry stood there, paralyzed, not knowing what to do or who to believe. He glanced around at Ron and Hermione. Ron looked just as confused as he did, still fighting to keep hold of the struggling Scabbers. Hermione, however, took an uncertain step towards Snape and said in a very breathless voice,
"Professor Snape, it wouldn't hurt to hear what they've got to say, would it?"
"Miss Granger, you are already facing suspension from this school," Snape spat. "You, Potter and Weasley, are out of bounds in the company of a convicted murderer and a werewolf. For once in your life, hold your tongue."
"But if there was a mistake..."
"Keep quiet, you stupid girl!" Snape shouted, looking suddenly quite deranged. "Don't talk about what you don't understand!" A few sparks shot out of the end of his wand, which was still pointing at Black's face. Hermione fell silent. "Vengeance is very sweet," Snape breathed at Black. "How I hoped I would be the one to catch you."
"The joke's on you again, Severus," snarled Black. "As long as this boy brings his rat up to the castle," he jerked his head at Ron, "I'll come quietly."
"Up to the castle?" said Snape silkily. "I don't think we need to go that far. All I have to do is call the Dementors once we get out of the willow. They'll be very pleased to see you, Black. Pleased enough to give you a little kiss, I dare say." What little colour there was in Black's face left it.
You've got to hear me out," he croaked. "The rat! Look at the rat!"
But there was a mad glint in Snape's eye that Harry had never seen before. He seemed beyond reason.
"Come on, all of you," he said.
He clicked his fingers, and the ends of the cords that bound Lupin flew to his hands.
"I'll drag the werewolf. Perhaps the Dementors will have a kiss for him, too."
Before he knew what he was doing, Harry had crossed the room in three strides and blocked the door.
"Get out of the way, Potter! You're in enough trouble already!" snarled Snape. "If I hadn't been here to save your skin,
Professor Lupin could have killed me about 100 times this year," Harry said. "I've been alone with him loads of times, having defence lessons against the Dementors. If he was helping Black, why didn't he just finish me off then?"
"Don't ask me to fathom the way a werewolf's mind works," hissed Snape. "Get out of the way, Potter!"
"You're pathetic," Harry yelled. "Just because they made a fool of you at school, you won't even listen."
"Silence! I will not be spoken to like that!"
Snape shrieked, looking madder than ever.
"Like father, like son, Potter. I have just saved your neck. You should be thanking me on bended knee. You would have been well served if he'd killed you. You'd have died like your father, too arrogant to believe you might be mistaken in Black. Now get out of the way, or I will make you."
"Get out of the way, Potter!"
Harry made up his mind in a split second. Before Snape could take even one step towards him, he had raised his wand.
"Expelliarmus!" he yelled,
except that his wasn't the only voice that shouted.
there was a blast that made the door rattle on its hinges. Snape was lifted off his feet and slammed into the wall, then slid down it to the floor, a trickle of blood oozing from under his hair. He had been knocked out. Harry looked around. Both Ron and Hermione had tried to disarm Snape at exactly the same moment. Snape's wand soared in a high arc and landed on the bed next to Crookshanks.
"You shouldn't have done that," said Black, looking at Harry. "You should have left him to me."
Harry avoided Black's eyes. He wasn't sure, even now, that he'd done the right thing.
"We attacked a teacher! We attacked a teacher!"
Hermione whimpered, staring at the lifeless Snape with frightened eyes.
"Oh, we're going to be in so much trouble!"
Lupin was struggling against his bonds. Black bent down quickly and untied him. Lupin straightened up, rubbing his arms where the ropes had cut into them.
"Thank you, Harry," he said.
"I'm still not saying I believe you," Harry retorted.
"Then it's time we offered you some proof," said Black. "You, boy, give me Peter, now!"
Ron clutched Scabbers closer to his chest.
"Come off it," he said weakly. "Are you trying to say you broke out of Azkaban just to get your hands on Scabbers? I mean—"
He looked up at Harry and Hermione for support. "Okay, say Pettigrew could turn into a rat. There are millions of rats. How's he supposed to know which one he's after, if he was locked up in Azkaban?"
"You know, Sirius, that's a fair question," said Lupin, turning to Black and frowning slightly. "How did you find out where he was?"
Black put one of his claw-like hands inside his robes and took out a crumpled piece of paper, which he smoothed flat and held out to show the others. It was the photograph of Ron and his family that had appeared in the Daily Prophet the previous summer, and there, on Ron's shoulder, was Scabbers.
"How did you get this?"
Lupin asked Black, thunderstruck.
"Fudge," said Black. "When he came to inspect Azkaban last year, he gave me his paper, and there was Peter on the front page, on this boy's shoulder. I knew him at once. How many times had I seen him transform? And the caption said the boy would be going back to Hogwarts, to where Harry was."
"My God,"
said Lupin softly, staring from Scabbers to the picture in the paper and back again. "His front paw!"
"What about it?" said Ron defiantly.
"He's got a toe missing," said Black.
"Of course," Lupin breathed. "So simple, so brilliant. He cut it off himself?"
"Just before he transformed," said Black. "When I cornered him, he yelled for the whole street to hear that I'd betrayed Lily and James. Then, before I could curse him, he blew apart the street with the wand behind his back, killed everyone within 20 feet of himself, and sped down into the sewer with the other rats."
"Didn't you ever hear, Ron?" said Lupin. "The biggest bit of Peter they found was his finger."
"Look, Scabbers probably had a fight with another rat or something. He's been in my family for ages, right?"
12 years, in fact," said Lupin. "Didn't you ever wonder why he was living so long?"
"We've been taking good care of him," said Ron.
"Not looking too good at the moment, though, is he?" said Lupin. "I'd guess he's been losing weight ever since he heard Sirius was on the loose again."
"He's been scared of that mad cat," said Ron,
nodding towards Crookshanks, who was still purring on the bed.
But that wasn't right, Harry thought suddenly. Scabbers had been looking ill before he met Crookshanks, ever since Ron's return from Egypt, since the time when Black had escaped.
"This cat isn't mad," said Black hoarsely.
He reached out a bony hand and stroked Crookshanks' fluffy head.
"He's the most intelligent of his kind I've ever met. He recognized Peter for what he was straight away. And when he met me, he knew I was no dog. It was a while before he trusted me. Finally, I managed to communicate to him what I was after, and he's been helping me."
"What do you mean?" breathed Hermione.
"He tried to bring Peter to me, but couldn't, so he stole the passwords into Gryffindor Tower for me. As I understand it, he took them from a boy's bedside table."
Harry's brain seemed to be sagging under the weight of what he was hearing. It was absurd, and yet...
But Peter got wind of what was going on and ran for it. This cat, Crookshanks, did you call him, told me Peter had left blood on the sheets. I suppose he bit himself. Well, faking his own death had worked once. These words jolted Harry to his senses.
And why did he fake his death? He said furiously. Because he knew you were about to kill him like you killed my parents.
No, said Lupin. Harry.
And now you've come to finish him off.
Yes, I have, said Black with an evil look at Scabbers.
Then I should have let Snape take you, Harry shouted.
Harry, said Lupin hurriedly, don't you see? All this time we've thought Sirius betrayed your parents and Peter tracked him down, but it was the other way around. Don't you see? Peter betrayed your mother and father. Sirius tracked Peter down.
That's not true, Harry yelled. He was their secret keeper. He said so before you turned up. He said he killed them.
He was pointing at Black, who shook his head slowly. The sunken eyes were suddenly overbright.
Harry, I as good as killed them, he croaked. I persuaded Lily and James to change to Peter at the last moment, persuaded them to use him as secret keeper instead of me. I'm to blame, I know it. The night they died, I'd arranged to check on Peter, make sure he was still safe, but when I arrived at his hiding place, he'd gone. Yet there was no sign of a struggle. It didn't feel right. I was scared. I set out for your parents' house straight away, and when I saw their house destroyed, and their bodies, I realized what Peter must have done. What I had done.
His voice broke. He turned away.
Enough of this, said Lupin, and there was a steely note in his voice Harry had never heard before. There's one certain way to prove what really happened. Ron, give me that rat!
What are you going to do with him if I give him to you? Ron asked Lupin tensely.
Force him to show himself, said Lupin. If he really is a rat, it won't hurt him.
Ron hesitated, then at long last held out Scabbers, and Lupin took him. Scabbers began to squeak without stopping, twisting and turning, his tiny black eyes bulging in his head.
"Ready, Sirius?" said Lupin.
Black had already retrieved Snape's wand from the bed. He approached Lupin and the struggling rat, and his wet eyes suddenly seemed to be burning in his face.
"Together," he said quietly.
"I think so," said Lupin, holding Scabbers tightly in one hand and his wand in the other. On the count of three. One, two, three! A flash of blue-white light erupted from both wands. For a moment, Scabbers was frozen in mid-air, his small black form twisting madly. Ron yelled. The rat fell and hit the floor. There was another blinding flash of light, and then... It was like watching a speeded-up film of a growing tree. A head was shooting upwards from the ground. Limbs were sprouting. Next moment, a man was standing where Scabbers had been, cringing and wringing his hands. Crookshanks was spitting and snarling on the bed, the hair on his back standing up. He was a very short man, hardly taller than Harry and Hermione. His thin, colourless hair was unkempt, and there was a large bald patch on top. He had the shrunken appearance of a plump man who had lost a lot of weight in a short time. His skin looked grubby, almost like Scabbers's fur, and something of the rat lingered around his pointed nose, his very small, watery eyes. He looked around at them all, his breathing fast and shallow. Harry saw his eyes dart to the door and back again.
"Well, hello, Peter," said Lupin pleasantly, as though rats frequently erupted into old school friends around him. "Long time no see."
"Sirius! Remus!"
Even Pettigrew's voice was squeaky. Again his eyes darted towards the door.
"My friends! My old friends!"
Black's wand arm rose, but Lupin seized him around the wrist, gave him a warning look, then turned again to Pettigrew, his voice light and casual.
"'We've been having a little chat, Peter, "'about what happened the night Lily and James died. "'You might have missed the finer points "'while you were squeaking around down there on the bed.'
"'Remus!' gasped Pettigrew, "'and Harry could see beads of sweat "'breaking out over his pasty face. "'You don't believe him, do you? "'He tried to kill me, Remus!'
"'So we've heard,' said Lupin, more coldly. "'I'd like to clear up one or two little matters with you, Peter, if you'd be so—'
"'He's come to try and kill me again!'
Pettigrew shrieked suddenly, pointing at Black, and Harry saw that he used his middle finger because his index was missing.
"'He killed Lily and James, and now he's going to kill me, too! You've got to help me, Remus!'
Black's face looked more skull-like than ever as he stared at Pettigrew with his fathomless eyes. "'No one's going to try and kill you until we've sorted a few things out,' said Lupin.
"'Sorted things out!' squealed Pettigrew, looking wildly about him once more, eyes taking in the boarded windows and, again, the only door. "'I knew he'd come after me. I knew he'd be back for me. I've been waiting for this for 12 years!'
"'You knew Sirius was going to break out of Azkaban?' said Lupin, his brow furrowed. "'When nobody has ever done it before?'
"'He's got dark powers the rest of us can only dream of!' Pettigrew shouted shrilly. "'How else did he get out of there? I suppose he who must not be named taught him a few tricks!'
Black started to laugh, a horrible, mirthless laugh that filled the whole room.
"'Voldemort! Teach me tricks!' he said.
Pettigrew flinched as though Black had brandished a whip at him.
"'What? Scared to hear your old master's name?' said Black. "'I don't blame you, Peter. His lot aren't very happy with you, are they?'
"'Don't know what you mean, Sirius,'
muttered Pettigrew, his breathing faster than ever. His whole face was shining with sweat now.
"'You haven't been hiding from me for 12 years,' said Black. "'You've been hiding from Voldemort's old supporters. "'I heard things in Azkaban, Peter. "'They all think you're dead, or you'd have to answer to them. "'I've heard them screaming all sorts of things in their sleep. "'Sounds like they think the double-crosser double-crossed them. "'Voldemort went to the Potters on your information, "'and Voldemort met his downfall there. "'And not all Voldemort's supporters ended up in Azkaban, did they? "'There are still plenty out there, biding their time, "'pretending they've seen the error of their ways. "'If they ever got wind that you were still alive, Peter—'
"'Don't know what you're talking about!'
said Pettigrew again, more shrilly than ever. He wiped his face on his sleeve and looked up at Lupin.
"'You don't believe this madness, Remus?'
"'I must admit, Peter, I have difficulty in understanding why an innocent man would want to spend 12 years as a rat,' said Lupin evenly.
"'Innocent but scared!' squealed Pettigrew. "'If Voldemort's supporters were after me, it was because I put one of their best men in Azkaban, the spy, Sirius Black!'
Black's face contorted.
"'How dare you!'
he growled, suddenly sounding like the bear-sized dog he had been.
"'I, a spy for Voldemort! When did I ever sneak around people who were stronger and more powerful than myself? But you, Peter, I'll never understand why I didn't see you with a spy from the start!' You always liked big friends who'd look after you, didn't you? It used to be us, me and Remus and James.
Pettigrew wiped his face again. He was almost panting for breath.
Me, a spy? Must be out of your mind. Never. Don't know how you can say such a...
Lily and James only made you secret keeper because I suggested it,
Black hissed, so venomously that Pettigrew took a step backwards.
I thought it was the perfect plan. A bluff. Voldemort would be sure to come after me. He would never dream they'd use a weak, talentless thing like you. It must have been the finest moment of your miserable life, telling Voldemort you could hand him the Potters.
Pettigrew was muttering distractedly. Harry caught words like
far-fetched and lunacy.
But he couldn't help paying more attention to the ashen colour of Pettigrew's face and the way his eyes continued to dart towards the windows and door.
"'Professor Lupin,' said Hermione timidly, "'can I say something?'
"'Certainly, Hermione,' said Lupin courteously.
"'Well, Scabbers, I mean this man,
He's been sleeping in Harry's dormitory for 3 years. If he's working for you-know-who, how come he never tried to hurt Harry before now?
There! Said Pettigrew shrilly, pointing at Hermione with his maimed hand. Thank you. You see, Remus, I've never hurt a hair of Harry's head. Why should I?
I'll tell you why, said Black. Because you never did anything for anyone unless you could see what was in it for you. Voldemort's been in hiding for 12 years. They say he's half dead. You weren't about to commit murder right under Albus Dumbledore's nose for a wreck of a wizard who'd lost all his power, were you? You'd want to be quite sure he was the biggest bully in the playground before you went back to him, wouldn't you? Why else did you find a wizard family to take you in? Keeping an ear out for news, weren't you, Peter? Just in case your old protector regained strength and it was safe to rejoin him.
Pettigrew opened his mouth and closed it several times. He seemed to have lost the ability to talk.
Mr. Black, Sirius, said Hermione timidly.
Black jumped at being addressed like this, and stared at Hermione as though being spoken to politely was something he had long forgotten.
If you don't mind me asking, how did you get out of Azkaban if you didn't use dark magic? Thank you! Gasped Pettigrew, nodding frantically at her. Exactly! Precisely what I—
But Lupin silenced him with a look. Black was frowning slightly at Hermione, but not as though he was annoyed with her. He seemed to be pondering his answer.
"I don't know how I did it," he said slowly. "I think the only reason I never lost my mind is that I knew I was innocent. That wasn't a happy thought, so the Dementors couldn't suck it out of me. But it kept me sane, and knowing who I am helped me keep my powers. So when it all became too much, I could transform in my cell, become a dog. Dementors can't see, you know," he swallowed. "They feel their way towards people by sensing their emotions. They could tell that my feelings were less human, less complex when I was a dog, but they thought, of course, that I was losing my mind, like everyone else in there, so it didn't trouble them. But I was weak, very weak, and I had no hope of driving them away from me without a wand. But then I saw Peter in that picture. I realized he was at Hogwarts with Harry, perfectly positioned to act if one hint reached his ears that the dark side was gathering strength again. Pettigrew was shaking his head, mouthing noiselessly, but staring all the while at Black as though hypnotized. Ready to strike the moment he could be sure of allies, to deliver the last Potter to them. If he gave them Harry, who'd dare say he'd betrayed Lord Voldemort? He'd be welcomed back with honours. So you see, I had to do something. I was the only one who knew Peter was still alive.
Harry remembered what Mr. Weasley had told Mrs. Weasley. The guards say he's been talking in his sleep, always the same words. He's at Hogwarts.
It was as if someone had lit a fire in my head, and the Dementors couldn't destroy it. It wasn't a happy feeling. It was an obsession. But it gave me strength. It cleared my mind. So one night, when they opened my door to bring food, I slipped past them as a dog. It's so much harder for them to sense animal emotions that they were confused. I was thin, very thin, thin enough to slip through the bars. I swam as a dog back to the mainland. I journeyed north and slipped into the Hogwarts grounds as a dog. I've been living in the forest ever since, except when I come to watch the Quidditch, of course. You fly as well as your father did, Harry.
He looked at Harry, who did not look away.
Believe me, croaked Black, believe me, I never betrayed James and Lily. I would have died before I betrayed them.
And, at long last, Harry believed him. Throat too tight to speak, he nodded.
No!
Pettigrew had fallen to his knees as though Harry's nod had been his own death sentence. He shuffled forward on his knees, grovelling, his hands clasped in front of him, as though praying.
Sirius, it's me, it's Peter, your friend, you wouldn't!
Black kicked out, and Pettigrew recoiled.
There's enough filth on my robes without you touching them, said Black.
Remus!
Pettigrew squeaked, turning to Lupin instead, writhing imploringly in front of him.
"You don't believe this! Wouldn't Sirius have told you they'd changed the plan?"
"Not if he thought I was the spy, Peter," said Lupin. "I assume that's why you didn't tell me, Sirius," he said casually over Pettigrew's head.
"Forgive me, Remus," said Black.
"Not at all, Padfoot, old friend," said Lupin, who was now rolling up his sleeves. "And will you in turn forgive me for believing you were the spy?"
"Of course," said Black,
and the ghost of a grin flitted across his gaunt face. He, too, began rolling up his sleeves.
"Shall we kill him together?"
"Yes, I think so," said Lupin grimly.
"You wouldn't! You won't!"
gasped Pettigrew, and he scrambled around to Ron.
"Ron, haven't I been a good friend, a good pet? You won't let them kill me, Ron, will you? You're on my side, aren't you?"
But Ron was staring at Pettigrew with the utmost revulsion.
"I let you sleep in my bed," he said.
"Kind boy, kind master,"
Pettigrew crawled towards Ron.
"You won't let them do it. I was your rat. I was a good pet."
"If you made a better rat than human, it's not much to boast about, Peter," said Black harshly.
Ron, going still paler with pain, wrenched his broken leg out of Pettigrew's reach. Pettigrew turned on his knees, staggered forwards, and seized the hem of Hermione's robes.
"Sweet girl, clever girl, you won't let them. Help me!"
Hermione pulled her robes out of Pettigrew's clutching hands and backed away against the wall, looking horrified. Pettigrew knelt, trembling uncontrollably, and turned his head slowly towards Harry.
"Harry, Harry, you look just like your father, just like him."
"How dare you speak to Harry?" roared Black. "How dare you face him? How dare you talk about James in front of him?"
"Harry,"
whispered Pettigrew, shuffling towards him, hands outstretched.
"Harry, James wouldn't have wanted me killed. James would have understood, Harry. He would have shown me mercy."
Both Black and Lupin strode forwards, seized Pettigrew's shoulders, and threw him backwards onto the floor. He sat there, twitching with terror, staring up at them.
"You sold Lily and James to Voldemort," said Black, who was shaking too. "Do you deny it?"
Pettigrew burst into tears. It was horrible to watch. He looked like an oversized, balding baby cowering on the floor.
"Sirius! Sirius! What could I have done? The Dark Lord! You have no idea! He has weapons you can't imagine! I was scared, Sirius. I was never brave like you and Remus and James. I never meant it to happen! He who must not be named forced me!"
"Don't lie!" bellowed Black. "You'd been passing information to him for a year before Lily and James died. You were his spy."
He was taking over everywhere," gasped Pettigrew. But what was there to be gained by refusing him?"
"What was there to be gained by fighting the most evil wizard who has ever existed?" said Black, with a terrible fury in his face. "Only innocent lives, Peter!"
"You don't understand,"
whined Pettigrew.
"He would have killed me, Sirius."
"Then you should have died," roared Black. "Died rather than betray your friends, as we would have done for you."
Black and Lupin stood shoulder to shoulder, wands raised. "You should have realized," said Lupin quietly, "if Voldemort didn't kill you, we would. Goodbye, Peter." Hermione covered her face with her hands and turned to the wall.
"No!"
Harry yelled. He ran forwards, placing himself in front of Pettigrew, facing the wands.
"You can't kill him," he said breathlessly. "You can't."
Black and Lupin both looked staggered.
"Harry, this piece of vermin is the reason you have no parents," Black snarled. "This cringing bit of filth would have seen you die, too, without turning a hair. You heard him.
His own stinking skin meant more to him than your whole family."
"I know," Harry panted. "We'll take him up to the castle. We'll hand him over to the Dementors. He can go to Azkaban. Just don't kill him."
"Harry!"
gasped Pettigrew, and he flung his arms around Harry's knees.
"You... thank you. It's more than I deserve. Thank you."
"Get off me," Harry spat, throwing Pettigrew's hands off him in disgust. "I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing it because I don't reckon my dad would have wanted his best friends to become killers. Just for you."
No one moved or made a sound except Pettigrew, whose breath was coming in wheezes as he clutched his chest. Black and Lupin were looking at each other. Then, with one movement, they lowered their wands.
"You're the only person who has the right to decide, Harry," said Black. "But think what he did."
"He can go to Azkaban," Harry repeated. "If anyone deserves that place, he does." Pettigrew was still wheezing behind him.
"Very well," said Lupin. "Stand aside, Harry."
Harry hesitated.
"I'm going to tie him up," said Lupin. "That's all, I swear."
Harry stepped out of the way. Thin cords shot from Lupin's wand this time, and next moment Pettigrew was wriggling on the floor, bound and gagged.
"But if you transform, Peter," growled Black,
his own wand pointing at Pettigrew too,
"we will kill you. You agree, Harry?"
Harry looked down at the pitiful figure on the floor and nodded so that Pettigrew could see him.
"Right," said Lupin, suddenly businesslike. "Ron, I can't mend bones nearly as well as Madame Pumphrey, so I think it's best if we just strap your leg up until we can get you to the hospital wing."
He hurried over to Ron, bent down, tapped Ron's leg with his wand, and muttered, "Ferula." Bandages spun up Ron's leg, strapping it tightly to a splint. Lupin helped him to his feet. Ron put his weight gingerly on the leg and didn't wince.
"That's better," he said. "Thanks."
"What about Professor Snape?" said Hermione in a small voice, looking down at Snape's prone figure.
"There's nothing seriously wrong with him," said Lupin,
bending over Snape and checking his pulse.
"You were just a little over-enthusiastic. Still out cold. Perhaps it will be best if we don't revive him until we're safely back in the castle. We can take him like this," he muttered. "Mobile corpus." As though invisible strings were tied to Snape's wrists, neck, and knees, he was pulled into a standing position, head still lolling unpleasantly like a grotesque puppet. He hung a few inches above the ground, his limp feet dangling. Lupin picked up the invisibility cloak and tucked it safely into his pocket.
"And two of us should be chained to this," said Black, nudging Pettigrew with his toe, "just to make sure."
"I'll do it," said Lupin.
"And me," said Ron savagely, limping forwards. Black conjured heavy manacles from thin air. Soon Pettigrew was upright again, left arm chained to Lupin's right, right arm to Ron's left. Ron's face was set. He seemed to have taken Scabbers's true identity as a personal insult. Crookshanks leapt lightly off the bed and led the way out of the room, his bottle-brush tail held jauntily high.
Chapter 20. The Dementor's Kiss. Harry had never been part of a stranger group. Crookshanks led the way down the stairs. Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron went next, looking like contestants in a six-legged race. Next came Professor Snape, drifting creepily along, his toes hitting each stair as they descended, held up by his own wand, which was being pointed at him by Sirius. Harry and Hermione brought up the rear. Getting back into the tunnel was difficult. Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron had to turn sideways to manage it. Lupin still had Pettigrew covered with his wand. Harry could see them edging awkwardly along the tunnel in single file. Crookshanks was still in the lead. Harry went right after Sirius, who was still making Snape drift along ahead of them. He kept bumping his lolling head on the low ceiling. Harry had the impression Sirius was making no effort to prevent this.
"You know what this means?"
Sirius said abruptly to Harry as they made their slow progress along the tunnel.
"Turning Pettigrew in?"
"You're free," said Harry.
"Yes," said Sirius, "but I'm also, I don't know if anyone ever told you, I'm your godfather."
"Yeah, I knew that," said Harry.
"Well, your parents appointed me your guardian," said Sirius stiffly, "if anything happened to them."
Harry waited. Did Sirius mean what he thought he meant?
"I understand, of course, if you want to stay with your aunt and uncle," said Sirius. "But, well, think about it. Once my name's cleared, if you wanted a different home..."
Some sort of explosion took place in the pit of Harry's stomach.
"What? Live with you?" he said, accidentally cracking his head on a bit of rock protruding from the ceiling. "Leave the Dursleys?"
"Of course, I thought you wouldn't want to," said Sirius quickly. "I understand. I just thought I'd..."
"Are you mad?" said Harry, his voice easily as croaky as Sirius.
"Of course I want to leave the Dursleys. Have you got a house? When can I move in?"
Sirius turned right around to look at him. Snape's head was scraping the ceiling, but Sirius didn't seem to care.
"You want to?" he said. "You mean it?"
"Yeah, I mean it," said Harry.
Sirius' gaunt face broke into the first true smile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger was shining through the starved mask. For a moment he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding. They did not speak again until they had reached the end of the tunnel. Crookshanks darted up first. He had evidently pressed his paw to the knot on the trunk, because Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron clambered upwards without any sound of savaging branches. Sirius saw Snape up through the hole, then stood back for Harry and Hermione to pass. At last, all of them were out. The grounds were very dark now. The only light came from the distant windows of the castle. Without a word, they set off. Pettigrew was still wheezing and occasionally whimpering. Harry's mind was buzzing. He was going to leave the Dursleys. He was going to live with Sirius Black, his parents' best friend. He felt dazed. What would happen when he told the Dursleys he was going to live with the convict they'd seen on television?
"One wrong move, Peter," said Lupin threateningly ahead. His wand was still pointed sideways at Pettigrew's chest.
Silently they tramped through the grounds, the castle lights growing slowly larger. Snape was still drifting weirdly ahead of Sirius, his chin bumping on his chest. And then a cloud shifted. There were suddenly dim shadows on the ground. Their party was bathed in moonlight. Snape collided with Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron, who had stopped abruptly. Sirius froze. He flung out an arm to make Harry and Hermione stop. Harry could see Lupin's silhouette. He had gone rigid. Then his limbs began to shake.
"Oh, my!" Hermione gasped. "He didn't take his potion tonight. He's not safe!"
"Run!" Sirius whispered. "Run! Now!"
But Harry couldn't run. Ron was chained to Pettigrew and Lupin. He leapt forwards, but Sirius caught him round the chest and threw him back.
"Leave it to me. Run!"
There was a terrible snarling noise. Lupin's head was lengthening. So was his body. His shoulders were hunching. Hair was sprouting visibly on his face and hands, which were curling into clawed paws. Crookshanks's fur was on end again. He was backing away. As the werewolf reared, snapping its long jaws, Sirius disappeared from Harry's side. He had transformed. The enormous, bear-like dog bounded forwards. As the werewolf wrenched itself free of the manacle binding it, the dog seized it about the neck and pulled it backwards, away from Ron and Pettigrew. They were locked jaw to jaw, claws ripping at each other. Harry stood, transfixed by the sight, too intent upon the battle to notice anything else. It was Hermione's scream that alerted him. Pettigrew had dived for Lupin's dropped wand. Ron, unsteady on his bandaged leg, fell. There was a bang, a burst of light, and Ron lay motionless on the ground. Another bang. Crookshanks flew into the air and back to the earth in a heap. "Expelliarmus!" Harry yelled, pointing his own wand at Pettigrew. Lupin's wand flew high into the air and out of sight. "Stay where you are!" Harry shouted, running forwards. Too late. Pettigrew had transformed. Harry saw his bald tail whip through the manacle on Ron's outstretched arm and heard a scurrying through the grass. There was a howl and a rumbling growl. Harry turned to see the werewolf taking flight. It was galloping into the forest. "Sirius! He's gone! Pettigrew transformed!" Harry yelled. Sirius was bleeding. There were gashes across his muzzle and back. But at Harry's words, he scrambled up again, and in an instant the sound of his paws was fading to silence as he pounded away across the grounds. Harry and Hermione dashed over to Ron.
"What did he do to him?"
Hermione whispered. Ron's eyes were only half-closed. His mouth hung open. He was definitely alive. They could hear him breathing, but he didn't seem to recognize them. "I don't know." Harry looked desperately around. Black and Lupin both gone. They had no one but Snape for company, still hanging unconscious in mid-air. "We'd better get them up to the castle and tell someone," said Harry, pushing his hair out of his eyes, trying to think straight. "Come!" But then, out of the darkness, they heard a yelping, a whining, a dog in pain. "Sirius!" Harry muttered, staring into the darkness. He had a moment's indecision, but there was nothing they could do for Ron at the moment, and by the sound of it, Black was in trouble. Harry set off at a run, Hermione right behind him. The yelping seemed to be coming from near the lake. They pelted towards it, and Harry, running flat out, felt the cold, without realizing what it must mean. The yelping stopped abruptly. As they reached the lake's shore, they saw why. Sirius had turned back into a man. He was crouched on all fours, his hands over his head. "No!" he moaned. "No! Please!" And then Harry saw them. Dementors. At least 100 of them, gliding in a black mass around the lake towards them. He spun around, the familiar icy cold penetrating his insides, fog starting to obscure his vision. More were appearing out of the darkness on every side. They were encircling them.
"Hermione, think of something happy!"
Harry yelled, raising his wand, blinking furiously to try and clear his vision, shaking his head to rid it of the faint screaming that had started inside it.
"I'm going to live with my godfather. I'm leaving the Dursleys."
He forced himself to think of Sirius and only Sirius and began to chant, "Expecto Patronum! Expecto Patronum!" Black gave a shudder, rolled over and lay motionless on the ground, pale as death.
"He'll be all right. I'm going to go and live with him."
"Expecto Patronum! Hermione, help me! Expecto Patronum!"
"Expecto,"
Hermione whispered.
"Expecto, expecto."
But she couldn't do it. The Dementors were closing in, barely 10 feet from them. They formed a solid wall around Harry and Hermione and were getting closer.
"Expecto Patronum,"
Harry yelled, trying to blot the screaming from his ears.
"Expecto Patronum."
A thin wisp of silver escaped his wand and hovered like mist before him. At the same moment, Harry felt Hermione collapse next to him. He was alone, completely alone.
"Expecto, expecto patronum!"
Harry felt his knees hit the cold grass. Fog was clouding his eyes. With a huge effort, he fought to remember. Sirius was innocent. "Innocent! We'll be okay! I'm going to live with him!"
"Expecto Patronum!"
he gasped. by the feeble light of his formless Patronus, he saw a Dementor halt very close to him. It couldn't walk through the cloud of silver mist Harry had conjured. A dead, slimy hand slid out from under the cloak. It made a gesture as though to sweep the Patronus aside.
"No, no!" Harry gasped. "He's innocent! Expecto, expecto Patronum!"
He could feel them watching him, hear their rattling breath like an evil wind around him. The nearest Dementor seemed to be considering him. Then it raised both its rotting hands and lowered its hood. Where there should have been eyes, there was only thin, grey, scabbed skin stretched blankly over empty sockets. But there was a mouth, a gaping, shapeless hole, sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle. A paralyzing terror filled Harry, so that he couldn't move or speak. His Patronus flickered and died. White fog was blinding him. He had to fight. Expecto Patronum! He couldn't see, and in the distance he heard the familiar screaming. Expecto Patronum! He groped in the mist for Sirius and found his arm. They weren't going to take him! But a pair of strong, clammy hands suddenly wrapped themselves around Harry's neck. They were forcing his face upwards. He could feel its breath. It was going to get rid of him first. He could feel its putrid breath. His mother was screaming in his ears. She was going to be the last thing he ever heard. And then, through the fog that was drowning him, he thought he saw a silvery light growing brighter and brighter. He felt himself fall forwards onto the grass. Face down, too weak to move, sick and shaking, Harry opened his eyes. The blinding light was illuminating the grass around him. The screaming had stopped. The cold was ebbing away. Something was driving the Dementors back. It was circling around him and Sirius and Hermione. The rattling, sucking sounds of the Dementors were fading. They were leaving. The air was warm again. With every ounce of strength he could muster, Harry raised his head a few inches and saw an animal amidst the light, galloping away across the lake. Eyes blurred with sweat, Harry tried to make out what it was. It was bright as a unicorn. Fighting to stay conscious, Harry watched it canter to a halt as it reached the opposite shore. For a moment, Harry saw, by its brightness, somebody welcoming it back, raising his hand to pat it, someone who looked strangely familiar. But it couldn't be. Harry didn't understand. He couldn't think any more. He felt the last of his strength leave him, and his head hit the ground as he fainted. Chapter 21 Hermione's Secret.
Shocking business! Shocking! Miracle none of them died! Never heard the like! By thunder, it was lucky you were there, Snape!
Thank you, Minister.
Order of Merlin, second class, I'd say. First class, if I can wangle it.
Thank you very much indeed, Minister.
Nasty cut you've got there. Black's work, I suppose.
As a matter of fact, it was Potter, Weasley, and Granger, Minister.
No!
Black had bewitched them. I saw it immediately. A confundus charm, to judge by their behaviour. They seemed to think there was a possibility he was innocent. They weren't responsible for their actions. On the other hand, their interference might have permitted Black to escape. They obviously thought they were going to catch Black single-handed. They've got away with a great deal before now. I'm afraid it's given them rather a high opinion of themselves, and of course Potter has always been allowed an extraordinary amount of license by the headmaster.
Ah, well, Snape, Harry Potter, you know, we've all got a bit of a blind spot where he's concerned.
And yet, is it good for him to be given so much special treatment? Personally, I try to treat him like any other student, and any other student would be suspended at the very least for leading his friends into such danger. Consider, Minister, against all school rules, after all the precautions put in place for his protection, out of bounds, at night, consorting with a werewolf and a murderer, and I have reason to believe he has been visiting Hogsmeade illegally, too.
Well, well, we shall see, Snape, we shall see. The boy has undoubtedly been foolish.
Harry lay listening with his eyes tight shut. He felt very groggy. The words he was hearing seemed to be travelling very slowly from his ears to his brain, so that it was difficult to understand. His limbs felt like lead, his eyelids too heavy to lift. He wanted to lie here on this comfortable bed for ever.
"What amazes me most is the behaviour of the Dementors. You've really no idea what made them retreat, Snape?"
"No, Minister. By the time I had come round, they were heading back to their positions at the entrances."
"Extraordinary. And yet Black and Harry and the girl—"
"All unconscious by the time I reached them. I bound and gagged Black, naturally, conjured stretchers, and brought them all straight back to the castle." There was a pause. Harry's brain seemed to be moving a little faster, and as it did, a gnawing sensation grew in the pit of his stomach. He opened his eyes. Everything was slightly blurred. Somebody had removed his glasses. He was lying in the dark hospital wing. At the very end of the ward, he could make out Madame Pumphrey, with her back to him, bending over a bed. Harry squinted. Ron's red hair was visible beneath Madame Pumphrey's arm. Harry moved his head over on the pillow. In the bed to his right lay Hermione. Moonlight was falling across her bed. Her eyes were open, too. She looked petrified, and when she saw that Harry was awake, pressed a finger to her lips, then pointed to the hospital wing door. It was ajar, and the voices of Cornelius Fudge and Snape were coming through it from the corridor outside. Madame Pumphrey now came walking briskly up the dark ward to Harry's bed. He turned to look at her. She was carrying the largest block of chocolate he had ever seen in his life. It looked like a small boulder.
"Ah, you're awake," she said briskly.
She placed the chocolate on Harry's bedside table and began breaking it apart with a small hammer. "How's Ron?" said Harry and Hermione together.
"He'll live," said Madame Pumphrey, grimly. "As for you two, you'll be staying here until I'm satisfied you—" "Potter, what do you think you're doing?"
Harry was sitting up, putting his glasses back on and picking up his wand. "I need to see the headmaster," he said.
"Potter," said Madame Pumphrey, soothingly, "it's all right. They've got Black. He's locked away upstairs. The Dementors will be performing the kiss any moment now." "What?" Harry jumped up out of bed. Hermione had done the same, but his shout had been heard in the corridor outside. Next second, Cornelius Fudge and Snape had entered the ward.
"Harry, Harry, what's this?" said Fudge, looking agitated. "You should be in bed." "Has he had any chocolate?" he asked Madame Pumphrey anxiously.
"Minister, listen," Harry said. "Sirius Black's innocent. Peter Pettigrew faked his own death. We saw him tonight. You can't let the Dementors do that thing to Sirius. He's—"
But Fudge was shaking his head with a small smile on his face.
"Harry, Harry, you're very confused. You've been through a dreadful ordeal. Lie back down now. We've got everything under control."
"You haven't!" Harry yelled. "You've got the wrong man!"
"Minister, listen, please," Hermione said.
She had hurried to Harry's side and was gazing imploringly into Fudge's face.
"I saw him too. It was Ron's rat. He's an animagus. Pettigrew, I mean. And—"
"You see, Minister," said Snape, "confounded, both of them. Black's done a very good job on them."
"We're not confounded!" Harry roared.
"Minister, Professor," said Madame Pumphrey angrily, "I must insist that you leave. Potter is my patient, and he should not be distressed."
"I'm not distressed. I'm trying to tell them what happened," Harry said furiously. "If they'd just listen—"
But Madame Pumphrey suddenly stuffed a large chunk of chocolate into Harry's mouth. He choked, and she seized the opportunity to force him back onto the bed.
"Now, please, Minister, these children need care. Please leave."
The door opened again.
It was Dumbledore.